The little group nothing, in the face of the big group's apostasy, surprised those of the little group more than the fact that it was so little. Even though a vast number of brothers and sisters sympathized with them, only a few, at the last moment, sided with Amos, Jakub, and those who determined with them to stick to the way of Christ at all costs. Perhaps they hesitated because of the little group's unconditional tone. There is no middle way between carrying out the commands of Christ in every detail and conforming to the world on the other, Amos wrote in a letter to Jakub. Farmers take better care of their pigs, Jakub in turn wrote to Matej, than what you have taken care of the Lord's flock. But here and there in southern Bohemia and Moravia, in Kladov and Barun, in Landskron, and even at the Mount of Olives in Litomysl, congregations of the little group took shape. Matus, a weaver of Landskron, Onfe, a cobbler, Jan, a miller from Susis, Riha, a weaver from Votis, Havel, a tailor from Litomysl, Jink, a cooper from Votis, and Pavel, a convert from the extinct Taborites, became active workers among them. At the old monastery in Vilimov, the brothers reprinted Petro Chelsisi's Net of Faith and circulated handwritten tracts. They took a dim view of higher education, and because they would not take oaths, required in larger businesses, they contented themselves with working as farmers or craftsmen. For years after the division, those of the big group tried to win the little group back into their number, but without success. In a reply to them, Jakub wrote, 45 Anton Jindli, Geschichte der Böhmischen Brüder, 2 PG 312. Now the brothers say, let us open the gates of the fold to gather in more sheep. But when they open it up, the sheep already inside run out and the wolves tear them to pieces. The gates of the fold are the commandments and prohibitions of Christ, who is the straight path and the narrow door. Whoever tries to make this gate wider and says a brother may be a town councillor or a judge, take oaths, or exercise the bloody rites of the sword, is a thief and a murderer, trying to come in some other way. In the same tract, Jakub explained more beliefs of the little group. From the beginning of the world, good people have had to suffer. Those who have fallen away from the faith, referring here to Lucas and other leaders of the big group, have tried to prove that if a person suffers, being able to defend himself, his suffering is only like that of a donkey or another animal. But Christ did not take this view. He did not hesitate to lay his yoke upon his disciples and ask them, for the sake of the kingdom, to renounce their property and families. Christ found his followers among the lowly and poor, among servants not rulers, for it is not the poor who rule the world, but the rich. Christianity is a religion that blesses the poor and promises nothing but misery to the rich. During the early years of the unity, many renounced great estates, honor, fame, and a luxurious life. They suffered great trials, imprisonment, torture, and even death itself, with joy. Some of these, like the Sarovec and Sudomef families and our brother Votik, lived afterwards on the same level as the simple brothers. But now people with estates, the rich, the honored, and those who are friends with the world are coming into the church just as they are. Throughout the centuries, the true Christian faith has been held by only a small minority of those who say they believe. Whenever the church grew very large, the seed of true faith disappeared among them, but God preserves it among the faithful few. It is better to be on the right path with the chosen few than on the wrong path with the majority. It was to the small flock that Christ's words of comfort were directed. And when the great church fell away in the time of Constantine, it was only a few, the Waldenses, who stayed with the truth. But now even they have departed from their former teachings. Every movement, even though God begins it, suffers decline and corruption with time because of the enemy's wickedness. Now that is happening to the unity of brothers, those looking on can see by comparing the unity to what it used to be, that what began in the spirit is ending in the flesh. This is happening because the brothers wanted to avoid persecution and win large numbers of people into the church who were unwilling to make the sacrifices formerly demanded for entry into the brotherhood. Every word of Christ means exactly what it says, and he will in the end accept only those who accept his teaching. Heaven and earth will pass away before the least of his words. This is true in the matter of the oath. When Christ says, swear not at all, he means every kind of oath, just as James in James 5:12. And when Christians begin to set this aside and break his rule, they soon break his command to love their enemies as well, along with the rest of his commands in the Sermon on the Mount. Any attempt to do away with this one command is an attack on all the rest. There is no proof whatsoever that men exercising civil power have ever belonged to or had part in the Holy Church. To try and mix the two, the church with civil power, would be like mixing fire with water. Christian groups who do not listen to Christ's commands in the Sermon on the Mount and who allow their members to participate in the government are in fact the legions of damnation. You, of the big group, say you have not accepted the ways of the unbelieving world. But what else is it? Not only have you accepted them, but with pious words you try to hide the fact that you have now given liberty for brothers to take office, swear and fight in wars, deliver thieves up to justice, to the rack and the scaffold, and to return evil for evil. Why have we broken away from you? In the first place, it is because you oppress us by force. In second place, because you set yourselves up to judge but are not in a position to do so. In third place, because we cannot submit to your prostitution of doctrine through which you have corrupted what the Holy Scriptures teach. In reality, it is not we who have separated ourselves from you, but you from us. We are the ones who have stayed with what we formerly believed, and you are the ones who have brought in new and unheard of changes. The doctrine we now hold, many among you, like Brother Matej, for instance, held for years, and we are minded to hold to it until we die. It is the doctrine we believed for years under Brother Rehor, and many brothers and sisters still hold it dear. But now you, Matej, have of your own free will, as you say in a letter, deserted these teachings. Not only this, you have gone so far as to warn the congregations of the Unity against them. Community at Ledovice in Moravia, after the division of the Unity of Brothers, darkness and danger settled on Czech lands. By this time, the crown of Bohemia had passed to a son of the King of Poland. He married a French Catholic princess, and persecution increased. Here and there, believers who refused to conform suffered burning at the stake. Among the believers of the little group, not everything went peacefully. When the time came to ordain new leaders, Amos and Jakub disagreed on how to go about it. Jakub returned to the big group and many others lost interest. Then a new face appeared among the faithful, a knife grinder from Prague, a young man named Jan Kalanek, who had eagerly sought the way of Christ, first among the Hussites, then among the Lutherans, turned to the Unity of Brothers. Like Lucas, years earlier, he traveled to Mlada Boleslav and Brandes to see how they lived and what they believed. Unlike Lucas, with whom he spoke at Mlada Boleslav, Jan saw with grief and displeasure the worldly ways of those who had joined the Unity. His thirst for the truth gave him no rest until he discovered the little group, among whom he became a member with great joy around 1520. So energetic was Jan Kalanek in his newfound brotherhood that the congregation at Prague grew rapidly, and when old Amos died in 1522, he became the little group's leader. This alarmed the Hussite rulers of the city, who branded him on his face, whipped him publicly, and expelled him from the city in 1524. Two sisters and a brother lost their lives by burning, and others got long jail sentences. From Prague, Jan fled to a settlement of the little group at Letovice, far to the east, in Moravia. Other believers found their way there, and it became the center of the movement. From there, Jan carried on a lively correspondence and studied the New Testament eagerly to discover even more about the way of Christ. Under his leadership, the little group returned to baptizing only adults, on confession of faith. Their testimony against all forms of violence and swearing of oaths stood firm, and they chose to live like Christ in poverty. Like in early Christian times, and among the Waldenses and Albigenses before them, they practiced community of goods, and many of them remained single. No writing from the community at Ledovice appeared in print. Printing in those days was still a complicated and expensive procedure. But from Jan's letters that survive, their strong feeling against all forms of worldliness become clear. To those of the big group, Jan wrote, "You permit your members to carry on trades you did not formerly allow. Now they take interest on money. They buy things cheap and sell them for much more. Many of you who could exist on a single craft freely pursue several trades. More than that, you add field to field. You continually make more gardens, meadows, and vineyards, and buy up house after house, even village after village. In earlier times, Brother Lucas warned those who dealt in clothing, those who dyed material and tailors, to keep themselves from the vanity and wickedness of the world. But now you wear stylish clothes and live in luxurious houses. In the same way, your sisters, following your example, wear costly robes of velvet and lace. They put on fancily embroidered underclothing and dresses decorated with silk and gold." Sebastian Franck, a contemporary historian describing the little group in Moravia, wrote in 1531, "They agree altogether with the Anabaptists. Like them, they hold all things in common. They baptize no children and do not believe that the body of the Lord is present in the sacrament." Indeed, the similarity between some Czech believers and their Anabaptist neighbors was too great to miss. But Sebastian Franck was not nearly the first, nor the only one, to notice it. New brothers in Czech lands. Only a few years after Jan Kalanek fled from Prague to Moravia, he learned of a new group settling around Mikulov, Nikolsburg, Hustopisy, Auspitz, Slavkov-u-Bran, Austerlitz, and elsewhere on the lands of the Lords von Lichtenstein. Like the Waldenses, coming to Moravia years before, they were refugees, and like the Waldenses, they were German people, but they came from Switzerland and Austria, and they belonged to the new Anabaptist movement. even though communication was a problem. Both the little and big groups of the Unity of Brothers in Moravia hastened to meet their new neighbors and discover what they believed. The results were interesting, but did not lead to unity. On one hand, those of the big group had become far too involved in commerce and government for the Anabaptists to feel at one with them. Instead of coming to terms in spiritual matters, they came to terms materially, and at least 18 Anabaptist Bruderhof, brotherhood communities, flourished on estates of big group nobility. On the other hand, the Anabaptists did not live up to the ideals of the little group, patterned after centuries of careful and serious-minded following of Christ. Some Anabaptists, those in the city of Mikulov under Balthasar Hubmeier, did not hold a clear testimony against the use of the sword. Others, as reported by Jan Kalanick, tolerated worldly and frivolous professions like wood carving, painting, the cutting of jewels, and tavern keeping. Worst of all, even the most conservative group, those named for their leader, Jacob Hutter, had moral problems among them that they did not always take care of. In the Moravian town of Zadovice, Shadowitz, a group of Hutterite men, out for something to drink, stole several barrels of beer from the manorial brewery. In another incident, Hutterites were rightfully accused of stealing wood from a private forest. "And such men," a Czech brother wrote, "claim that they have mortified their flesh and are born again." Jan Kalanick, after lamenting the Anabaptists' spiritual pride and lack of love in condemning all who did not practice community just like them, praised them, however, for what he found good. "We rejoice in the fact that you have condemned infant baptism, baptizing a second time in faith," he wrote to them, "and also that you have attained the equality of the first kingdom, that is, of the church, where none may say, 'This is mine,' and when the Anabaptists faced persecution, the Czech brothers stood ready to help where they could." Community at Habrovany, just as close to the center of the little group at Ledovice as the Anabaptists, and even closer to them in background and belief, stood the community at Habrovany, a short distance north of Slavkov-Jubrena. The Habrovany brothers shared with the little group the spiritual background of the Waldensians in southern Bohemia, the revivals under Petr Chalchiki and Rehov, and the trial of persecution under Hussite and Catholic authorities, but they did not stand in direct association. In 1528, a Moravian nobleman, Jan Dubchansky, decided to follow Christ. Unlike Bohus Kostka, however, he did not try to be a Christian and live in luxury at the same time. He took the Sermon on the Mount as his guide and rejected violence and civil office at once. That brought him into contact with Vaslav of Lilek, the former rector of the monastery at Vilimov near Chelsea's, and with Matej, a Pushtevmik, hermit from Zatek, Saz, in western Bohemia. Long a refuge of the Waldenses, the Zatek area had a history of radical Christianity. On the German side of the mountains, at Zwickau, a group of prophets helped launch the Reformation. On the Czech side, Matej, a trapper who spent long times in the forest alone, discovered peace in Christ, and on his return to civilization began to preach on streets and squares, calling everyone to repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. A year after Matej began to preach, in 1520, a terrible plague struck Bohemia. Afraid to die, many, even in Prague, listened to his warnings and got converted. Others took deep offense. Matej spoke fearlessly against the corruption of wealth and power. In 1525, the Hussites threw him into prison. When they released him a year later, they drove him from Prague, and he went to live with Jan Dubkansky, the converted nobleman, at Habrovany in Moravia. Their Vaclav of Lilek joined them, and in 1528 they established a new congregation along the lines of Petr Kelcicki and Rehov's teaching, based on the Sermon on the Mount. Like the little group of the Unity, the brothers at Habrovany took a clear stand against all types of violence, the swearing of oaths, and participation in civil government. The outward sacraments of baptism and communion, however, were not as important to them, and believing in the priesthood of all believers, they had no ordained leaders. At Lulek in Moravia, they set up a print shop from where, after 1530, a steady stream of Czech books and tracts appeared. Then, in 1537, the authorities imprisoned Jan Dubkansky, and Czech believers fell on even harder times. Trouble in Czech lands with 300,000 soldiers, the Turkish Sultan, Suleiman the Magnificent, had stormed neighboring Hungary, including Slovakia, in 1526. Not only had this set Czech lands in danger, it pitted Protestants against Roman Catholics in their defense, and by the 1530s the Czechs found themselves in the heat of the Thirty Years' War. While the big group made peace with the Hussites and joined forces with them in armed resistance to the Roman Catholics from Austria, the little group divided over the use of costly dress material and ornaments in their homes. Jan Dubkansky died, and what was left of his followers at Habrovany joined the Anabaptists. Then, in 1546, Austrian troops crossed from Moravia into Bohemia. Prague fell into Roman Catholic hands. The Hussites made peace with the Pope to avoid annihilation, and 2 years later, the Holy Roman Emperor banished the unity of brothers by royal decree. Unwilling to face persecution as an illegal church, thousands from the big group went over en masse to the Hussites. A minority that refused, about 1,500 people, fled on foot and in refugee wagon trains through Silesia to Poland. The Anabaptists fled east to Hungary, and the little group with the brothers at Habrovany simply disappeared. A waning light 25 years after the Austrian takeover of Czech lands, a trickle of big group unity members returned from Poland. Little by little, they re-established their congregations, their schools, and publishing works. At Kralis in Moravia, they printed a beautiful Czech Bible in red and black ink with arabesque designs. At Ivancisi, Ibenschitz, and on the vast Zerotin estates, they cooperated with the Anabaptists, also returned from Hungary, in large farming, ceramic, and winemaking enterprises. But very little of the unity of brothers' love for Christ returned with their peace and prosperity. The difference between them and their Hussite or Catholic neighbors was primarily in name. Then on March 28, 1592, Martin and Anna Kamensky, a big group unity couple of Nivnice in Moravia, had a little boy they named John Amos. By the time he was 12, they had both died, and after 4 miserable years, he found his way into the Unity of Brothers school at Ferov, Prerov. John Amos Kamensky, John Amos Comenius, did more at school than play games and socialize with the young people. He studied the scriptures earnestly and discovered, to his dismay, how far his church had strayed from what it originally believed. He also made friends with the Anabaptists in surrounding communities and admired them for their inner order and discipline, by which they surpassed all other denominations. Then, after his ordination, he found his way to the old Waldensian refugee settlement at Fulnik in Moravia. Living in a room alongside the meeting house at Fulnik, John Amos learned to know the descendants of these German believers, plain, industrious, minding their own business on little farms hidden in the valleys of Neuchitzkain, Zauchenthal, and Selin. The Kuhlandl, little land of the cows, the Germans called it. And in its quiet seclusion, John Amos discovered a remnant of the faith he believed his church had lost. He worked among the German members of the Unity, at Fulnik, with great enthusiasm, until disaster struck.